couple of years ago, I found you on Twitter and you were tweeting about some religious experiences, and you had some research about Bitcoin as a religion, things like this. And I started to follow you. Could you tell us a bit about like how religion has played a role in your life and how it changed with Bitcoin coming into the picture?
Yeah, so I grew up in Austria, and Austria is a very kind of conservative country and Catholic country, and I would say religion plays a large role in certain areas still. Like, I mean, in the cities it's different, but outside I think people are still very traditional and religious, and you know, go to church on Sundays and so on. And so that was my first contact with religion, was basically organized Catholic religion. Both like my family was a little bit involved in that, like you know, going to church from on the special days in the year, on Easter and Christmas and so on. Like that's just what you did. And I wouldn't say that my dad was very religious, but he went to church as well. And so my first contact with religion was kind of a rebellion against that. So yeah, I kind of, once I got a little bit older, or you know, at the end of puberty, let's say, I rebelled kind of hard against it and was very against all forms of religion and very leaning towards the atheist viewpoint, in the sense that you know, we now have science and technology and we don't need these old myths anymore, and we can explain everything that used to be explained with gods using science and using you know, like deductive reasoning and so on. And so I would say my first real touch point with religion was a negative one, in the sense that I dismissed it completely. And so far, even to, you know, be one of the what's the term, militant atheist, I think is the term, where, you know, like everything is bad, and I still think, you know, there's a lot to be said about the bad things of that were done in the name of religion, and about organized religion, and you know, of course, you know, the Catholic Church comes to mind. I mean, many things have happened there that are not okay under any framework. So I'm still very sympathetic to these kind of viewpoints, and I understand where all these people are coming from that are just dismissing everything outright and so on. But I kind of, my view on the whole matter changed thanks to Jordan Peterson, actually, and other people like Jordan Peugeot. That's not his first name, Jonathan Peugeot. And just kind of maybe looking at it from a different perspective, in the sense that it's a different truth, a different realm almost than what the scientific realm is exploring. It's more in the realm of storytelling and narrative, and why are certain things just absolute truths and outside of the domain of science? Something like, you know, like a hero's journey, you know, like why is this narrative, this storyline, true, in the sense that this always happens to people, and it always has the same pattern, you know? And, or like also something that Peterson says, why is the court jester, you know, like the precursor to the wise man, and why can he, why are there certain people that are allowed to make fun of the king and won't be killed and so on, you know? Like this is outside of scientific exploration, I would say. You know, I mean, you can explain some things with sociology and psychology, maybe, I don't know, but it's very, very different from, you know, like I don't know, measuring the speed of light or what have you, you know. and so this really changed my view on things in the sense that some things are just true in regards to human nature and human experience. And these stories are about those things, and they are not about, you know, like the age of the earth, that the earth is like supposedly, I don't know how many years old, you know, like that there are these very shallow and very kind of these caricatures of those things where people will come out and say, yeah, according to the Bible, the earth is 6,000 years old. And then all the geologists make fun of the people that are saying this and so on. And I think this is just not very, very productive. And I used to be in the, you know, making fun of those kind of people camp, but I really changed my mind on that. And this is already a very long-winded answer, but to kind of come to the point of the what I call a religious experience, because I simply don't have another word for it. Yeah. Maybe I have other words for it. It basically what happened was that for the longest time, and Eric Kaysen talks about this as well, for the longest time I thought I was just insane. I was just okay. I studied Bitcoin and I came to certain conclusions. And as far as I could tell, I was the only one that came to these conclusions. And I was dismissing these conclusions because I just thought, that's crazy. And so I'm crazy and just, you know, like, don't really think too hard about it because, you know, like, it's just the craziest thought that I have that, you know, like Bitcoin can't be killed and it can only grow and so it will swallow basically all the stored value of the earth and will become the one money and will, you know, like return the sovereignty to the individual and, you know, put the individual in the center again of kind of the power structures and so on. And this, of course, is a large change. And I didn't really lean into it because I thought, okay, that's insane. You know, like that's something that you just sometimes think up and you're, that doesn't make it true. That doesn't mean that you're right. And
have you ever thought about it as terms of right brain and left brain, where the right intuitive brain is more like vision based, more like, so this kind of insight about Bitcoin, it sounds more like it's like a right kind of brain compared to, you know, calculating the age of the earth and so on.
Yeah, I think I mean there's a lot to be said about this. I always knew kind of that there are different ways of knowing, so to speak. You know, I used to skateboard a lot, like it was my main sport. You know, I still do skateboard from time to time, but you know, like I'm I'm not 16 anymore, so I have to be very careful with what I do. And so I mean, you know, like the metaphor that a lot of people give is surfing. When you're riding a wave, you know what you need to do, but it's very hard to kind of put your finger on the knowing, you know. Or dancing is a similar thing where just your body knows intuitively what to do. You can't really explain it, you know. And that was true for me as well. Like I grew up skateboarding. I've been skateboarding for like 30 plus years, and I started when I was really, really small. So when I was like 3 years old or so, and so I knew exactly how a skateboard behaves and what to do and how I should position my feet and how to move my body to do certain things. And sometimes, you know, people would always come up to me and ask like, how do you do this trick or what have you? And I never was able to explain it. You know, it was just like, I just knew exactly what to do and I can't really explain it to you how to do it. You know, it's just, and of course, John Rivaki talks about this all the time, the different kinds of knowing. I didn't have the vocabulary back then, of course, you know, and now I do. That, you know, like there's this also this participatory knowing, you know, like you know how it is to, I don't know, you to be on a rave, for example, and you can read about things like that all your life, but if you never participated in that, you will never know how it is and so on. And there's also, you know, it's funny, one funny question to ask people is truly how they think about things, you know, like do you have an internal monologue, for example? Are you talking to yourself when you're thinking about things, or are you visualizing things, and if you're visualizing them, how are you visualizing them? And I think, you know, there it gives pointers to left brain, right brain activity. And so I coming back to the Bitcoin story, you know, yeah. I had like my kind of realization that Bitcoin is just here to stay, basically, came from the technical side. But the insights that were triggered and like, okay, what's going to happen to the world if this is actually true? They were way more like visions and kind of very free floating insights that just kind of came to me. Again, like I never leaned into this. I always dismissed it. And then I was in Riga and I met for the first time. I was to various like Bitcoin things before and so on, but it was never, I never met the right people, so to speak. That's how I like to think about it. And in Riga, there was a very high concentration of what we now call Bitcoin maximalists. And I immediately recognized that at least a dozen of the people that were there came to exactly the same conclusion. And I just knew, you know, like I just, by talking to certain people for like 2 minutes, I just knew, okay, they went through the same thing and they came to the same conclusions. And now we are all here. And it kind of, it was just too much to handle for me to realize that, turns out I'm not insane. Turns out maybe I'm not crazy. You know, maybe everyone else is just, maybe I'm just early, you know, not crazy. And that was kind of, I'm not sure what the right word is, but it was very exciting, of course, you know, and it was also kind of terrifying. And
so you allowed yourself to lean into these insights more then because you felt, oh, maybe it's not crazy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And so it kind of all bubbled up and because of all the excitement and all that, I was not able to sleep anymore. Hmm. And so I was up for, you know, one night and I was like, and I was already kind of, it was stressing me out that I wasn't able to sleep. But I was like, ah, okay, it's fine. You know, like it's just, I'll be so tired tomorrow. It doesn't matter. Like it's not the first night that I skip, you know, like with growing up with LAN parties and, you know, all that kind of things. It's, you can skip a night. It's usually not a big deal. and so I was trusting that just the next day I would be tired and would sleep. And next day I talked some more to those people and was just also normal conference activities and so on. And I tried to be really responsible and went to bed early and really tried, you know, some meditation and breathing exercises just to, you know, calm myself down and slow down my breath and trying to put myself to sleep, so to speak. And it didn't work for the second night. So I was up the second night, just, you know, laying in bed, having my brain run in circles, basically. And it happened the third night again.
It's like an upgrade of your, it's like your left, like your right brain upgraded your left brain to sort of integrate the intuitive insights and creating mental models for them to be able to communicate with them, with others.
After this all happened to me, I was using the metaphor, you know, how your computer sometimes hangs and just one process has like 100% of the CPU power and it cannot stop.
Yeah.
And that's how it felt like to me. And it was just, you know, the Bitcoin process was just using up 100% of my brain CPU. And it was very weird. I tried to kind of as best as I could really like call myself and, you know, like not go crazy on the spot and so on. But of course, with the sleep deprivation, things got really weird really quickly. Like after third night, I had trouble just, you know, like preparing breakfast or like, you know, moving into a shop to get a bottle of water or something like that. And so it just got increasingly wild. And In the end, I managed to kind of get back to Austria and get back home, and lots of wild things happened because I was basically turning into a crazy person. I was sleep deprived and all the rest of it, and I now understand all the religious texts that I've read in the past and I dismissed, you know, like talking bushes and having visions and having, you know, speaking with God and so on, because that's very much what it felt like to me after a couple of days of not sleeping and having my brain lit on fire by Bitcoin. And so, in the end, I got some medication that just calmed me down and I was able to sleep. And, I had doctors supervise me that they were basically like, okay, like that sometimes happens to people. So like, you know, like, don't be too worried about it, so to speak. And I was like, holy fucking shit, if that happens to people, like that's something. And so now, to answer your original question, I was completely lacking the, like, I had no idea what happened to me. And reading more into it and talking to people and so on, it felt very much like just a spontaneous religious experience, kind of, you know, like my aperture was opening up widely. And also to come back to the left brain, right brain metaphor, it felt like there was no distinction anymore. Everything was completely connected all the time. And people that, you know, are, you know, everyone who had a strong trip, I think, knows what I'm talking about, where you just make a connection between absolutely everything and everything is meaningful. That was something that completely blew my mind. Like everything was meaningful and things were, you know, speaking to me directly, so to speak. And so now having gone through this experience, I'm still very scientifically minded, you know, like, don't get me wrong. I can't kind of unprogram decades of training in physics and math and computer science and so on. I still view the world mostly through that lens. But I also can't dismiss the experience I had as just my brain misfiring, you know, or my brain whatever, because it was the realest thing I ever experienced, kind of, you know. And a lot of people that have these experiences, they will tell you that. But it's just, you know, I that's kind of the point where I'm at now. It's, I don't fucking know what happened and I don't fucking know how the world works. I thought I knew, but I clearly don't. And everything might be more complicated and more mysterious than, we might be able to decipher with our scientific tools. Let's put it like that.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Thank you for sharing. I have gone through similar things and explored this a lot, and that's why the name Bitcoin Consciousness mm-hmm. Podcast, right? So from one perspective, on the left brain, the rational brain, they were dealing only with the mental models, right? So we have mental models who we think we are, we have mm-hmm. mental models what we think the world is. And then if we shift over to the right brain, everything just is. And in a spiritual sense, we can say that you start to identify with your timeless self or your soul or whatever. So if you shift to this right one, your identity becomes undefinable. It becomes beyond any concepts, and the world becomes beyond any concepts, because you exist in a state of what is, right? But if you hone this, if you exercise this awareness, we are able to live in this state and create an identity, like undefined identity in that state, where we know that all the left brain is doing, it's just dealing with concepts, right, about everything, but it's never truths. It's all the time subjective models of everything. And it's, you know, because I've been writing articles about Bitcoin as a spiritual path. So your story fits right in there with my work, my research, because it's basically that Bitcoin is right brain centered, or it's born from a higher consciousness. It's not so. You can say that the rational mind is like a lower consciousness, and then the intuitive mind is higher consciousness of different levels. And Bitcoin comes from one of those higher consciousness. So when we come in contact with it, we start to activate that side also in ourselves, because it just is, right? It doesn't have opinions. You can't define it. But you can define it, but you quite quickly realize that you're just using models to define it. So it's constantly breaking your models.
Yeah.
So the more you think about it, the more your left brain is getting crazy, and you sort of have to retreat to the right one to even comprehend its greatness.
Yeah, you have to. That is so true, and you just have to accept it. I'm getting goosebumps just with what you said, because it's so insanely true, and it sounds so ridiculous, but just humor me for a second also with the models and how it breaks all models and the different modes of being. And like I think what you said is spot on, that you know the scientific worldview produces models, and all these models are wrong. They have to be, because they're models, you know, like and I've been harping on about this for the last, I don't know, 2 or 3 years now, with that the map is not the territory usually, you know, like you the scientific worldview is very, very good at, you know, creating maps. And the thing with direct experiences, and that's also why this was so, this experience was hyper real to me, because it was a direct experience. It was like, it was not a model or anything like that. It was the real thing. And the funny thing about Bitcoin is that it's also the real thing. You know, the Bitcoin doesn't work by creating models and trying to execute these models. Bitcoin is the thing itself. And it is, you know, like I've wrote about this a lot, but the funny thing about Bitcoin is that it is like an informational construct that has reality embedded in the information itself. And that's why you can have 12 words in your head, and it has the wealth is stored there. You know, it's not a password or anything like that. It's not a key to something that's stored somewhere else, basically, you know, like it's not like, you know, like a password to your bank account or something. That's not the right way to think about it. It really is the reification of information, as Adam Gibson calls it. You know, it's like it uses pure information to create something real. And I also like what you said, you know, like it's just there, and it just works, and it's everywhere and nowhere, and it just exists, and it doesn't have an opinion, and it will break all your models just because of that. And I think this is what's happening to a lot of people. And also like one funny thing was, I was very outspoken kind of about what happened to me, and people kept reaching out to me saying that, you know, a similar thing happened to them. And that's also why I kind of leaned into the idea that, okay, if this is true, then, you know, Bitcoin will become spiritual very quickly. And I think we see this happening, you know, like, and that's why I said, you know, like Bitcoin religion kind of is pre-programmed, you know, it's if this keeps happening to people. And I think, you know, there is also a reason for that, because as you said, Bitcoin is just there. So it's this unmoving thing, you know, and you just keep smashing your head against it, trying to understand it. And some people go crazy, and some people, you know, have enlightenment experiences, I guess. And a friend of mine, Thomas Rowlight, would be a good example as well. You know, like he always says that Bitcoin cannot lie to you, you know, like it is this beacon of absolute truth, because it is truth by definition. And it also seems to be allergic to lies, you know, like that's why a lot of people that want to corrupt it and want to change it and are saying untruthful things about Bitcoin, they will get rejected basically by the Bitcoin organism, or go crazy on their own and so on. And it's funny that this alone is enough to kind of turn on people, you know, like really you start aligning with Bitcoin, and you start to burn off your untruthful self or your what have you, your model self, even, you know. And yeah, I think it's super, super interesting that that's something in the end so simple as Bitcoin, you know, like once you understand how it works, it's not like super, super, super duper complicated. It's just so new that it's so hard to understand, you know. But it's interesting that it seems to be a repeatable experiment. It seems to happen to more and more people. And I don't know what the ratio is, you know, like if you take 1,000 people and everyone studies Bitcoin for 10,000 hours, you know, how many people will have these kind of experiences or these kind of personal transformations? I would guess that the percentage is actually higher than we would like to think. It's just that we're still at a stage where most people are not willing to talk about it publicly, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I had my shift from left brain to right brain before Bitcoin existed. So it's more than 20 years ago now. What made it, the connection for me when I went down the Bitcoin rabbit hole was this with decentralization. And So it was sort of like a rumor I heard, like, but I didn't think that it was possible with pure, true decentralization. So I was just searching in that direction a lot. And then at some point I got convinced, and that's really when it clicked for me, because my spiritual journey during these 20 years was that I was visiting many different centralized religions, centralized spiritual paths, you know, teachers, gurus. And in my spiritual journey, I came to a point about 5-6 years ago when I realized that I can't find the truth outside of myself, and that it's actually inside of myself. And when it's inside of myself, this becomes decentralized, because if it's inside me, it's inside everyone. So when I was searching for God, you know, I was searching outside of myself for 15 years, all these different healing methods and stuff like this. But I did never realized, just on a conceptual level, I thought I was searching for God, but actually I was searching for sort of myself. I was searching for my node on the decentralized creation network, you know. So then I become really, I was setting up my own node on the decentralized God network, if you see what I mean. And then when I was looking around for the other religion, spiritual paths, they just looked like shit coins to me, because they were just centralized around concepts, you know, ideas of promises, empty promises, just to collect people because they were, you know, insecure in themselves and they hadn't found their nodes. So they needed followers to feel worthy, you know. And so finding that spirituality and finding out that God is decentralized when I can't find him outside, and then finding that inside of Bitcoin, it was like Bitcoin was like a mirror of God, if you see what I mean. It was the pure, true decentralization. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if you saw, but I like you, like a short time after I had this experience, I wrote up some of my thoughts in a Twitter thread, and it's called Circularity. And like halfway down the thread, I will mention that I drew a certain pattern over and over again in my notebooks when I went through this experience. And I sometimes drew this round circular pattern as a mirror, because I also think that Bitcoin is a mirror, because it, in the end, it reflects like back to you who you are and how you view the world. And I also think that, again, like Toma comes to mind again, because I feel like he's currently going through this all, and he just recently tweeted out, I think, you know, like not even 24 hours ago or so, that at the bottom of the Bitcoin rabbit hole you will only find yourself, you know. And that's very much true, I think. And I also think there is no real bottom, you know. You just you will just start anew, you know. That's how it was in my visions, kind of, where that might be true, you know. But then you're back to square one, you know, and then there is, then the journey kind of begins anew, maybe. And yeah, I think we kind of, from a collective spiritual perspective, I think we knew these kind of things, or we know these kind of things. Definitely in the Eastern traditions, they know these kind of things. Alan Watts talked about this a lot, you know, like that's just, it's, you know, like the Godhead is in everyone, and most people just, you know, kind of act as if this wasn't true, basically. And yeah, I mean, it's, I don't know. I think it's interesting that you talk about these things in the vocabulary of Bitcoin, with centralization and decentralization, because there is something to be said about that.
Because if you look through history, it seems people mm-hmm. thought that God was sort of centralized, so they gather mm-hmm. around different ideas rather than looking inside themselves.
Yeah, I think that's very much true.
So on my website, I use this slogan, you can say, when it says individual sovereignty on all levels. So I thought this represented my current direction. And it would be interesting to talk to you about these different aspects. I thought about physical sovereignty, digital sovereignty, and then conceptual or spiritual sovereignty. So those are the areas that I've picked out. Maybe you can think of even more. But if we start with the physical one, it's quite obvious maybe, but it's the ability for our physical body to be wherever it wants to be, wherever we want it to be, and for it to be able to act out any actions that we want it to act out. Like that's physical sovereignty. So for example, you have moved to another country recently, and you make sure that you create an environment there where you are able to choose which actions you do as much of the day as possible. Do you have any thoughts about this?
Yeah, I think I quickly run into you know, edge cases and asterisks kind of that you have to think about, because it's obviously not doing like absolutely whatever you want to do. It's basically doing what you do by the limits bestowed upon you, and also without hurting others, for example, you know, like I think, you know, self-sovereignty is not about allowing yourself to act out your genocidal fantasies if you have them, you know, like that's, I think we always will need certain things that ensure that it's not only optimized, or not only good for yourself, but also good for others, and yeah, good for your family and your community and your future self, and so on and so forth. So that's how I would like to think about it.
Yes, but that's part of the sort of your discipline or your decision process, whatever it is, if it's intuitive mm-hmm. or if it's rational. But you as a person, then, like a physical being, that you have the right to live in any way you want to. And then, you, of course, if you do bad things, it's consequences of that. But still, mm-hmm. if you live like the government wants you to live, you know, then you will have certain imprints already from the school and so on. So they want you to live like they teach you in the school. So they want you to live under financial pressure to get the things that are deemed necessary from a culture point of view. So you spend your life basically trying to live up to other people's expectations, governments, families, wives. So that's mm-hmm. not sovereignty in my mind, because that's, you're not sovereign, and you're basically a slave of other people's expectations. So when I say sovereignty, you know, that you're able to take decisions however you do that, and live exactly the life you want to live.
Yeah, of course. I think it will get increasingly obvious that these things are very important. I think the problem that I see, I mean, I obviously think about these kind of things a lot as well, and it's very hard to be self-sufficient, especially in you cannot build your own smartphone, period. You know, like, it's just, there is no way. You know what I'm trying to get at? It's like you can have your own chicken coop, and you can produce your own eggs with your own chickens and so on. Like, that's not a big deal, but producing your own smartphone is very hard indeed. Like, you wouldn't be able to do it if you would live for like 10,000 years, you know, like you definitely. What am I trying to say? I'm trying to say that we are all embedded in a network, and we all have dependencies, so to speak. But still, I think what you mentioned about the government and the schooling system and those kind of things, I think it's mostly the way I think about these things is in terms of incentives. What are the incentives set up by the system? And I think every Bitcoiner should really realize that Bitcoin only works and works the way it works because of the incentive structure that is set up. And once you understand this, it's very, I'm not sure if it's easy, but it's you can apply it to all the other systems. And then you will immediately see that in many systems, the incentive structure is insanely skewed, and if the incentives of the system are working against you or working towards corrupting the individuals, for example, then this is bound to happen. And you can see this also, take Zoom as an example. The incentives are set up so that shareholder profits are maximized every quarter, and so you have to drive people into pro plans and whatnot, and that's why the free plans are, you know, like, that's why these limitations come up. And now if you just, you know, download Zoom and want to have a call, it will stop automatically after 45 minutes. And it's all incentive driven. And I think that's why I mentioned in the beginning, you know, like, it's you want to think about, like, what's good right now, what's good for your future self, and what's good in the broader scheme of things. And I think people will realize this as we move further into chaotic territory in the world, because things will get increasingly chaotic as the fiat empire collapses, basically. And you will need to learn to be more self-sovereign. And that's also what you listed before, and what I assume you list on your site, how to, you know, like, host your own content. Don't be dependent on things like, in the podcast world, for example, don't be dependent on Anchor is what it's called.
Yeah.
don't try to move away from these things, because there will come a day where they will just delete your files, you know. And we see this also in the social media realm, for example, you know, like all of these things. You're not self-sovereign on Twitter, for example. Like, you can be deplatform censored. Twitter can go bankrupt and shut down and so on. And I'm saying this as a huge Twitter fan, you know, and as a user. And these things are hard. And of course, you know, in the Bitcoin world, Bitcoin allows you to be self-sovereign in the financial realm. You can hold your own keys, run your own node. You can run your own ASICs and produce your own hash rate. And then you're truly, truly self-sovereign. And I think this will be increasingly important. And I mean, we see this already, you know, like, just looking at the Canadian trucker protests and so on, where people get deplatformed from society, basically, for honking too loudly. And this will happen again and again and again. And so I think, at least in the digital realm, which is you know, the one I spend most time with, I would say, this will be very obvious to more and more people that you need to take your self-sovereignty seriously. In the physical realm, I'm not sure. I think it depends on how bad it gets, you know, like with all the things that happened in the past 2.5 years, it might get bad indeed, that you might be better advised to actually, you know, get a chicken coop and get your own chickens and get your own water supply and have a garden and those kind of things, or move somewhere close to local food sources and so on. We are seeing right now how brittle the globalized supply chains are, and also how brittle the globalized food supply is, you know, like with fertilizer shortages and just, you know, prices of oil and gas going through the roof. Everything will get way, way, way more expensive. And I think in the end, it's, I think it's, you spoke about the levels of self-sovereignty and the levels of consciousness, so to speak. And I think obviously at the very base is your physical safety and the water that you drink and the food you eat. And, you know, the levels above that are, you know, like your digital self-sovereignty. And I guess the your spiritual self-sovereignty is across all other levels, because I guess it will help you stay sane and maybe help you to execute the steps you need to take to become more self-sovereign. So yeah, I think all of this is important and will become increasingly important over the next couple of years, because we're just moving into chaotic times.
Yeah, I agree that they are connected, because your spiritual sovereignty is influencing your actions, and your actions is influencing what you want to do on the internet. And then you need to make sure that you're able to express yourself in the way you want on the internet. And so maybe the core here is actually the decision process, the conceptual or spiritual aspect, because that's what's controlling everything else. And
yeah,
and if we connect this with, you mentioned a hero's journey, Joseph Campbell, maybe your hero's journey. And the hero's journey is, from my perspective, it's that you're breaking free from all those expectations, and to draw a connection with the node on the creation network, is that you're coming in contact with your node, with your inner divinity. So rather than acting on other people's expectations, you know, before it's like mothers, fathers, teachers, employers, and then it's like wives and kids. So it's all the time, all these external expectations. And if we only live to try to fulfill other people's expectations, we are ignoring our hero's journey, because we are not taking the decisions from our own node, our own divinity. We are just living up to other people's expectations. And when we go on this journey of the hero, we become ourselves, our true self, our timeless self. So that's the right brain again. So rather than trying to figure out what everybody needs with the left brain and doing everything, like our actions are based in what needs to be done, what we figure out, then after these spiritual awakenings that you had been talking about, when we get this identity that is beyond this life, and it's a more of an essence, timeless essence, and that we come in contact with this, and we feel a deeper purpose, or almost like a mission that we're here on earth to do, then the hero's journey is to discover, what is this purpose? Like, what am I doing here? What should I be doing? What actions should I take? And if we are not sovereign on all these levels, we are not able to tap into our deeper purpose. We're not able to take decisions from our own co-creator node. Are you following? I'm just babbling along here. This sort of concludes so many things that we've been talking about up to this point.
I am following, and I would like to ask you, what is it that you think that you're doing on this earth?
Yeah, so from I found my node, you know, from I found my essence, identity beyond this earth life, you know, so I started to identify with timeless essence rather than the physical body or my self-image or the worldview. So then I wanted to go into this deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So as I do this, I connect then with this essence, and I start to live from there even more. It's like inner guidance. So this node is sort of inspiring me to do actions. So my motivations is not to earn money or to become famous or to have, because my life turned out so that I fulfilled all of those criteria already as a 20-year-old. That's why I was sort of started to look for deeper meaning, because I was very ambitious as a teenager. So I fulfilled my dreams already around age 20. So since then, it's been more about finding my essence and strengthening the connection with my essence to feel my purpose. In some cultures, some subcultures, this sounds strange, but in spirituality, this is the thing. This is what everyone does. It's like you have to find your purpose. So my purpose can't be defined because it's like coming from the inside every day. Mm-hmm. So, for example, like why I contacted you and why I'm doing this podcast, it was it was prompted from inside, like visions, and it comes like a vision, and then I just notice, and then it comes again, and then if it comes 2-3 times, that's how I take advice from my essence, and then I contacted you and said, you want to jump on the pod. So that's what I mean with spiritual sovereignty.
I see. May I ask you, because you just piqued my curiosity, what you did in your early 20s or in your teenage years, or basically what are you famous for in your previous life? If you you don't have to share, obviously, but I just got curious.
I'm happy to share that privately with you. But okay, I want to think about my digital sovereignty, right?
yeah, you don't want to combine identities on the air. Yeah. I see. Yeah. I still, a lot of people kind of people say so nice things about me and my work. I'm having a hard time coming to grips with that every single day. But they will also say, you're like, how do you come up with this stuff, and why are you so good at explaining this or what have you? And I have no answer. I have no idea where this is coming from. Poets will tell you this all the time. It's not them coming up with the with the poems or with the art. It's like it's the muse, and it's coming through you, and so I try to be very I try to not force it. All my best writing and all the things that had the most impact, they came to me in a flash of insight, basically. And I had to write those things. I had to finish them. And I usually manage to do this then in 3 or 5 days or something, without sleeping much. And I have to get this right, and I have to do it right now. The universe is calling, and this needs to be done. And so I can relate. I can relate a lot with what you just said in the terms of, it just comes up, but then you, if the signal, so to speak, is strong enough, that you have to act on it, so to speak. And that's how I increasingly operate as well.
Yeah, and for me, it goes together, with my beliefs that our core, since it's part of the creation, it is in its nature abundant. So if we let it flow, we will have like an abundant life. So that abundance comes into our being, comes into our life, and it's just natural that we have what we need. So we don't have to sort of be afraid that we will lose something by investing in this. And this is a little bit the ego thinks, I need to stay in control, the left brain, and I need to stay in control. I need to do this, otherwise I will not have this. I will not get this. So for me, for many years now, this believes that actually as much as you let this flow come through, the easier life will be, because you will enter this state of natural abundance.
Yeah, and I think it's also back to something we touched on in the beginning. It's like if you, like surfing a wave, if you if you've done it for a while and you know what you're doing, it's not work at all, you know. It's also not stressful. It's also not, even though, you know, like it is physically challenging, but it's way more like dancing, and it is this flow state, you know, as it's called in the scientific literature. And I think that's exactly where you want to be most of the time if you can manage it. I mean, you know, that would be optimal.
And it goes so well with your article. I really liked your article about value for value, because for mm-hmm. me, this really sinks into this, what I call higher consciousness. Because if you say lower consciousness, it's always this win-lose, like you do mm-hmm. something, but someone is losing. Mm-hmm. But the higher consciousness, like win-win, you find this how to make everyone win. And value for value, it's really like you're giving without expecting something in return. Yeah. While in lower consciousness, you're giving, expecting something in return, like conditional love. But mm-hmm. unconditional mm-hmm. love, it's more like you're standing in your glory or in your node, and you're expressing your purpose without expecting anything in return. Mm-hmm. And if it is good quality, and if you're allowing the creation to flow through you, you are actually producing something of quality. And then as a result, people are willing to give you value for your value. So mm-hmm. this value for value is really, it's one of those, like Bitcoin is on a higher consciousness and value for value is on a higher consciousness. And these kind of keys that will open up higher consciousness on the whole planet.
I like that a lot. I did not think it about, I did not think about it in this terms yet, but I think that's very fitting, you know. It's, and it truly is, like I'm also surprised, and I think everyone who tried the value for value model, especially in podcasting, because in podcasting it can be easily automated and people really like sending sets, it turns out. Yeah, like they really want to let other people know that they appreciate them, and people will send and stream and boost sets your way if you enable this. And so it was really surprising to me how kind of poisoned my thinking was by the conventional view of limiting. It's a very limited view that and I think it's, again, coming back to the informational realm and how things work in the digital space, I think it is very, very different. You know, like if you have a physical artifact, if you're doing pottery and you create the pot with your hands, you know, like you can't create a million pots and just give them away for free. But if you write a blog post, you know, even though it's work as well, replication is free with podcasts as well, and so on. And so you have to think about the value that is created very, very differently, I believe. And I think the right way to do it is to just do it and do it as best as you can and don't expect anything in return. And this is the value for value model. And you will be very surprised about what comes back, you know, like and also because replication is free and because information is abundant and ideas are abundant, I don't think it makes any sense to build a fence around information or to build a fence around ideas. You know, information wants to be free. It's I think paywalls are an absolutely terrible idea. You never want to have a paywall around your stuff, and that's why I'm so excited about the whole value for value idea, the value for value model, that it's free for everyone. And if you found it useful, if you found it valuable, it should be very, very easy to show your appreciation and give value back, and that's what this is based on. And so I have very high hopes for this whole idea, because it's more a psychological shift than anything else. It is a shift in consciousness, basically, you know. It's not a technological shift, really, even though, you know, we needed Bitcoin for this to really work, because micropayments didn't work before it, not economically feasible micropayments at least. And so now that we have this, I think it will be very important to talk with people about this and to allow for this psychological shift to happen, that information should be free and abundant. And if you think it's good, if it helped you, if it was valuable for you, it should be very easy to give something back.
Yeah. And if we compare this to, like, if you write a blog or you do something from your left brain, then it's all about trying to give people what you think they want, what you think they need. So you calculate, you rationalize, and you create something. For me, this just feels like you're selling yourself, because you're just, you know, you're creating what other people want. It just feels like a slave mm-hmm. mentality. If you compare to like what you describe, when you feel like you can hardly sleep for 3 days because you're writing an article, you know, this is like you expressing you. You're not trying to figure out what people want or if they read this, maybe something will happen. You just sort of express your essence. I don't know what to say. And you just leave it out there without like worrying about the judgment. It's just two different, very different mentalities.
Absolutely. And it's, I just always, I feel that I have to do this. Like, I have to do this. And that's why I also become so, that's where the lack of sleep comes from. You know, like if you feel like you really, really have to do this, then it will be like, you know, you will wake up and it's the first thing you think about. And what you mentioned in terms of audience capture and producing for the audience and not yourself and so on, I on purpose don't track anything on my site, for example. I don't even want to know. I don't want to know how many people read my stuff or what have you. I have no analytics at all, and I don't want to have them. And it's for that reason, because I know how dangerous it is once you start measuring those kind of things, that you will optimize. You will optimize for clicks. You will optimize for whatever, you know. And I don't care. I don't want to see it. I don't want to know it. That's not why I'm doing this. I'd rather have one person really understand something. Like, that's what I'm after. You know, I'm after the one person. I'm not after the millions of clicks or millions of views or what have you. Not at all. And so I think one has to be very careful with what you are kind of monitoring and measuring, because you will optimize consciously or subconsciously. Once you start measuring, you will try to optimize those metrics. And it's a very similar idea to, you know, like, you have to watch your thoughts, you know, like, you have to be careful what you think about, because you will become your thoughts very, very quickly. And so if you assume, you know, that everyone is out to get you, for example, like, that's one view of the world that you can have, it will kind of corrupt your soul very quickly. And I think that's just true in general. And I think most people are not careful enough with those kind of things, because you can see it over and over and over again. If people start tracking clicks and views and whatnot, and start to optimize for these metrics, it will kind of corrupt their essence, because, as you say, you know, like, they will start producing for the clicks and not for themselves and not for, you know.
And this is like going off track from the hero's journey, like when your left brain comes in and analyze too much. So if you get this, like you say, I have to write this article, or for me, like, I have to create this project, or I need to do this. And then if the left brain comes in too much, like you're saying, you're checking statistics, you're thinking, probably this will not work. Then you're sort of breaking the flow. You ignore your essence, and you start trusting the feedback from the audience and so on too much. So you not checking the website statistics, it's sort of like an outer representation of your inner, that you're not trusting your inner critics also so much, that you're willing to go with the flow and not worry so much about these filters. So what can go wrong?
Yeah, absolutely. I view it as like, you know, if you're serious about stopping drinking, for example, the first thing that you have to do is throw out all the bottles that you have at home and just never buy anything anymore, because you won't always have the resolve, you know, like you have to put yourself in a situation where you just can't access these kind of things. And that's why I'm not tracking things in the first place. I don't have any analytics whatsoever. there's no way for me to find out. I really hope that more people are kind of taking these things more seriously and just also then using tools that are just very simple and are focused on the essential things, kind of, you know. And in terms of writing, it's just about the contents of the writing. You don't need really all the bells and whistles and analytics of that most modern platforms have. I don't think it's good. And yeah, that's also something that Adam Curry talks about a lot in the value for value model. He obviously, you know, like as the podfather, his medium is podcasting. And he will also tell you that all the podcasting metrics, they are essentially broken because, you know, a download is not a listener and the listener is also not an engaged listener, you know, like it's very hard to measure these things in the first place. And you shouldn't take the analytics very seriously. And so it's way better to not care about it, have everything out in the open, run a value for value thing. And if it's enough to pay rent, what else do you want? You know, it's like you're doing what you love. you have full autonomy and full freedom in the sense of what you are producing and what you are talking about and so on. And it should just be enough. You know, I think we would have a way healthier media landscape if this would be the case for more producers and for more content outlets and so on. Like you don't have to be number one of the charts, and you don't have to, not every podcast needs to have like 10 million listeners and so on. And not every blog needs to be read by millions of people, you know, like it's, I don't know. It should be about the exchange of ideas, and it should be about also speaking your mind freely, which comes back to the self-sovereign idea, you know, like you should not be forced to self-censor because of audience capture or because of advertising or because of platform risk or what have you. And I really hope that value for value will move us into a direction where more people are speaking their mind and are speaking freely, and I think that's very much needed.
That was all the questions I had. Thank you very much for your time and your insights and your speculations today.
Thank you so much for inviting me. That was a pleasure talking to you. That was great.
Is it anything else you want to mention before we finish? Or?
No, not really. People will find me at my stuff online. I'm still writing. I'm still you know, exploring Bitcoin as best as I can. Still. I mentioned in the very beginning, you know, like I always talked about this as a religious experience because I don't have any other words. And as I said, this another thing popped into my mind that how you can kind of describe is it's basically Bitcoin completely blew my brains out, and I'm just, you know, in the process of picking up the pieces. And if you want to replace brain with ego or with soul or what have you, you're free to do that as well, because, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's what happened. And I assume that this will I will be picking up the pieces for a long time to come. So if someone wants to tag along, it's I'm easy to find in cyberspace, I would say.
Yeah good so I will see what happens in the future. I wish you all the best.
Likewise.
And, see you in cyberspace.
Yes, see you there.